Chapter 7. The Climb. Funny thing about a mountain. It always looks easier to climb when you're at the foot of it. In 2012, I had the honor of interviewing Valerie Simpson just after she'd lost her husband of 38 years, Nick Ashford. Better known as the legendary songwriting duo Ashford and Simpson, they had a four-decade musical partnership that produced some of the most memorable hits ever to come out of Motown. During our emotional conversation, Valerie shared the real story behind one of their greatest songs, Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Sing along if you'd like. We all know the words. Ain't no mountain high enough. Ain't no valley low enough. Ain't no river wide enough to keep me from getting to you, babe. Well, most people think of these as enduring words of love, expressing the deepest form of devotion. But as we talked, Valerie told me that when Nick originally wrote the lyrics, he was referring to his goal to one day write songs professionally. At the time, Nick was an unknown musician living in New York City, hoping to be discovered. While looking up at the skyscrapers towering above him, he came up with the phrase, "Ain't no mountain high enough," to convey just how determined he was that nothing was going to keep him from his dream. No wind, no rain, or winter's cold can stop me, babe, 'cause you are my goal. And he was right. Ain't No Mountain High Enough now holds a place in the Grammy Hall of Fame. I've always thought a mountain is a magnificent metaphor for life. From a distance, the ascent looks clear and smooth. But once you actually set out for the summit, you discover unexpected valleys and precarious ridges along the way. If your internal compass isn't set to keep climbing, every stumble will give you an excuse to turn back. Over the years, there have absolutely been times when I found myself climbing a steep, rocky road. Earlier, I shared the fears I struggled with when I was invited to give the commencement address at Harvard in 2013. I know my trepidation might seem surprising given the general perception of my career. After 25 years on a number one show, I had by most standards reached the summit. However, it just so happened that when Harvard's then-president, Drew Faust, called with her once-in-a-lifetime offer, I was in the midst of one of the biggest climbs of my life. I'd even started calling this new endeavor my Kilimanjaro. And in this particular instance, it seemed the higher I hiked, the trickier the terrain. At the time, I said I was getting my butt kicked in the news over the way OWN, the Oprah Winfrey Network, was, quote, struggling, as it was often reported. It felt like everywhere I looked, critics were taking me to task for OWN's performance. One of the toughest headlines announced, "Oprah Winfrey isn't quite holding her own." That one, I gotta tell you, stung. I'd enjoyed a long stretch at the top and was proud to be known as a powerful businesswoman. And now it felt like every decision I made ended up on the nightly news crawl. And so when Harvard reached out, all I could think was, what can I teach about success when I've stopped succeeding? It was a frustrating time. And to be frank, I was embarrassed. At one point, while I was in the shower, I was deliberating what to do. It's not a myth that some people make their best decisions in the shower. There really is something about the warm spray and lack of distraction that helps crystallize your thoughts. And indeed, as the water cascaded down and I thought about that mountain metaphor, I decided I would immediately stop calling the experience of building my own network anything but a privilege. I mean, really. I told myself, who gets to do this? It's the honor of a lifetime. If you think about it, people all over the world dream of climbing Kilimanjaro. The words to an old hymn started playing in my head. Trouble don't last always. I got out of the shower and thought, this too shall pass, and I will be the better for it. One of my favorite lessons from Joel Osteen is, what follows I am is what we're inviting into our life. Meaning when you use phrases like, I am exhausted, or I am overwhelmed, you are inviting exactly that kind of energy into your life. The moment I shifted my perspective from, I am struggling, to, I am honored, my climb was transformed from an arduous trek into a still challenging, but now stimulating adventure. And my entire outlook changed. Ever since that time, whenever I've encountered a disruption, rather than allowing it to rattle me, I ask myself one of the most meaningful and productive questions there is. What is this here to teach me? Today, OWN continues to evolve. Every day brings a new teachable moment, and I look back on each step of the journey with gratitude. The insights I hope you will embrace in this chapter reflect the knowledge I try to impart to my girls in South Africa as they consider any worthwhile pursuit. There will always be setbacks, I say. What you're experiencing is a detour. It's not the end of the road. You've got to be prepared to fail up. Most important, I teach the girls that everything that's happening to them is a means to help them evolve into who they are meant to become. Nothing is ever wasted or out of order. So when their will is being tested and all seems lost, I advise them to stop, get still, and listen. Their heart will tell them the next right step. And once they figure it out, it's time to look around and ask themselves, who is standing with me in the gap? Because what I discovered long ago is that when life is treating you well and it seems you can't go wrong, there will always be people who want to ride with you in the limo. But what you really want are the people who will take the bus with you when the limo breaks down. As you make your way up your mountains, no matter how steep the climb, remember the words of Nick Ashford. If you need me, call me, no matter where you are, no matter how far. Don't worry, baby, just call my name. I'll be there in a hurry. You don't have to worry, 'cause, baby, there ain't no mountain high enough. Your Kilimanjaro awaits. Here's a bit of my conversation with Eckhart Tolle.
From a higher perspective, being challenged is a good thing. Let's look at the nature of challenges. If you look at your own life or anybody's life, you may find that one way or another, obstacles seem to arise almost continuously in the form of difficult people, difficult situations. Some people have the perception that they're being sabotaged by life all the time. People resent being challenged by life. They think challenges should not exist. But at some point you realize that the world isn't here to make you happy. It can't do that.
It's sort of like human evolution, where you say it's not linear. You take two steps forward in your own life and a step backwards. And then the further back you go, the more of a bounce you have to move forward, right?
Yes, we definitely have evolved in consciousness, but it does not go in a straight line upward. You regress, and then you go forward a bit more. It goes in cycles. But that is a necessary part of the evolution. So we need the crisis. Humans don't grow except through facing the challenges and crises. So there are two levels of truth. One is to see the craziness of what's happening now. And another is to see from a higher perspective to what's happening now is part of the evolution. The ego is coming up. Is manifesting.
It needs to break down.
Yes.
So that something else can break through.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Here's Stephen Colbert.
Well, my mother used to say that in hardships in your life, try to look at this moment in the light of eternity. You know, let's try to see this how God might see it. If it's good or bad, any hardship or victory, with humility, with acceptance, and with love.
So,
and you can't love something until you can accept it.
Here's Vice President Joe Biden.
My mother used to say, and I thought it was so cruel at one point, especially when I lost my wife and daughter and we walked out of the hospital. They'd, a tractor trailer had broadside them and killed them, and my two sons were badly injured. And she said, Joey, grab my hand. She said, out of anything horrible, something good will come if you look hard enough for it. But that was my mother's notion. We were taught just to get up. When you get knocked down, just get up and move forward. And talk about how, you know, so many people without the kind of help that I had do it every day. Right today, there's somebody who's gone through something significantly worse than me, and they have nobody behind them, and they're getting up and they're moving. And it gives me such overwhelming confidence in people, the ability to absorb mm-hmm. pain and the spiritual reassurance that comes from knowing they're still a part of you.
Father Richard Rohr on the extraordinary beauty that grows from pain, if you allow it.
We each create our private salvation project, our private, what will make me wonderful, what will make me look beautiful and be admired. Every time you have to let go of that in its present form and reshape it, it's dying. It's, darn, I based my life on that, you know? I based my life on looking good or being a priest or whatever.
Or being married, and now that's falling apart. I have a friend who's going through divorce, and I said, you have to relearn a new normal.
But the old normal has to fall apart. That's dying.
That's right.
And you never go there voluntarily. You fall.
This is a psychological dying we're talking about.
Yes, it will be experienced psychologically.
Yes.
That's right.
When you go through a divorce and then first you are fighting it and you think it's the worst thing that could ever happen to you.
Yes.
And then you come out the other side of it and you feel a greater sense of freedom and a closer to your true self.
Might take you 5 years to get there.
Might take you
But you wake up one day and say, my God, this is much better.
Or you lose your job.
Or you lose your job, or you lose your reputation, or your money.
Yeah.
Or your child dies. You know, all of those immense tragedies. Yeah. That's the way the self expands. I'm sorry to say it's true. It's all what you do with suffering. If you don't transform your suffering, Oprah, I always say you will transmit it. With 100% certitude, you will transmit your suffering to your family, your neighbors, your country. Yeah.
And now, here's Rob Bell.
We always talk about marriage as a creative act. You're creating something new in the world. Mm-hmm. And for many people, it becomes heavy. It becomes, let's just try to stay together, duty, obligation, as opposed to, we get to make something with this life. Mm-hmm. And the two of us get to go on an adventure and create something new. So every problem becomes not, oh my word, are we gonna make it? But, well, look what came down the road today. I wonder what this will produce. Mm-hmm. I wonder what we'll learn through this. Mm-hmm. It's like a shift in how you view life and life together. Is it an adventure in which you actually get to create and co-create a life?
Alanis Morissette shares her greatest lesson.
I thought that all would be helped and healed and soothed by fame.
Because when I get famous, yes.
Then I will be less lonely, and
yes.
I will be understood, and I will be loved, and that love will go in and heal any of the broken parts.
And the truth is, there's no difference between fame or when I get thin, or when I get rich, or when I meet the right guy, when I get the job, when I get that car, when I get babies, then I will be...
When I retire.
When I retire, then I will be happy, I will be healed, I will be... And
everything
it's the same
will be
thing.
Okay, yes.
Everything will be okay.
Yes, as though somehow we as humans could be exempt from pain. You know, one of the big lessons I've learned over the last little while has been that if I can become comfortable with pain, which is different than suffering.
Yes.
If I can become comfortable with pain as just an indication, and it's potentially a daily thing, in my case it often is, mm-hmm. then there won't be my living in the future all the time. That one day if and when I'll be happy.
And now, Cheryl Strayed.
Well, how long do we hold on to this old idea? Mm-hmm. I was going to do this job, or I was going to go to this school, or I was going to be married to this person.
Yeah.
And it doesn't serve us anymore. And you know where that came from is I was asked to write a letter to my 20-something self. And that's one of the things I told my younger self, is that it was okay to rewrite my story from time to time. And not only okay, but necessary. Sometimes you do have to see things through, even though they don't cause you joy. But sometimes you need to say, you know what? I'm not going to surrender my joy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be this thing anymore. I'm going to be this other thing.
Here's Tracy Jackson.
Many times when you try to change, there are a whole circle of people who actually liked you better the old way.
You know, you develop languages with people. And you develop patterns of behavior, which is... I'm the dysfunctional one, you're the functional one, I'm the one in control, you're the one who's a little bit crazy, I'm always depressed, whatever it may be. And when you change that, all of a sudden their role in your life is put into question.
Yeah.
And they start having to question their own behavior,
That's right.
Which a lot of people don't like to do when it's forced on them.
Listen as I ask Tracy McMillan one of my favorite questions.
What's the lesson that's taken you the longest to learn?
I'd say the lesson that took me the longest to learn is compassion, right? For myself. Because I think what I used to be very hard on myself. I thought I was supposed to know things before it was possible to know them. The truth is that everything we're doing, that's our life's work. My life's work is to learn how to love better. My life's work is to learn how to put light in places where it's dark.
Here's Cindy Crawford on her shift.
The idea of getting older is daunting and intimidating and not that fun, really. But recently I shifted to, I have the privilege of getting older. And I really like that because it's really easy to spin off into the negative as opposed to, aren't we lucky that we're here, that we get to get older? I think it's a lot easier to see yourself getting older if you're happy in your life and if you're doing meaningful work and you are contributing to life in a way that makes you feel good about yourself.
Here's insight from Jon Bon Jovi.
Any time that you think you've hit the top of the mountain, the truth of the matter is you just reached another mountain and it's there to climb over again. So I made sure that I learned that early on, because had I accepted at 21 years old that a record deal was the top of the hill, that boy certainly couldn't talk to who I am now. Each step along the way is just a life's lesson in humility. And it gives you the ammunition to go on and be excited about the next day.
Here's Joel Osteen.
I don't think we realize what we're inviting into our life. You say, I am tired, I am frustrated, I am lonely. I think you're inviting more of that in that. So the principle is to turn it around, invite what you want into your life. I think there's a balance to it. And I don't think you're denying the facts. Otherwise, hey, well, I'm just hiding my head in the sand. It's not so much that. It's just not magnifying the negative. Like I talk about, I am a masterpiece. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I am strong. I am talented. I think that is speaking to the core of what God's put in each one of us, that he has equipped us. He's empowered us. We have what we need to fulfill our destiny. But I do think that we have to bring it out. And you can't bring it out being against yourself.